When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. What a terrible, terrible shooting in Kansas City. You know, people are out celebrating a great, great Super Bowl victory. And, you know, I don't know who did it. I don't know why they did it. But the idea of these shootings, Kansas City and Missouri have the most open-ended gun availability, I think, at least according to the TV, anybody over 18 can carry a gun anywhere except in a church or a school. They seem to have the two people. We don't know. We don't know what their motives are. We'll wait and see. But it's just awful that people can't go to a celebration and just enjoy the victory. And, thank God the police were there, and at least they control the situation, and it could have been a lot worse. All right, let's turn to the subject at hand today, and that is the impeachment of the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas. Look, I'm not a Mayorkas fan. I think the what's going on the border is awful. I'm a supporter of legal immigration. My grandparents came over legally. My great-grandfather came legally. Immigrants have changed this country for the better. But the current administration's non-policy is awful. And I think Mayorkas has not done a good job. And if Congress has voted unanimously or even on partisan lines to condemn him, I'd be all for that. That's an appropriate role for Congress to say, look, we've had hearings. We think this is terrible, and we condemn you for it. But impeachment has a constitutional criteria. It says you can be impeached only for treason. Treason has a definition. It's something where you take up arms. Bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. They didn't even charge Mayorkas with a high crime or a low crime. They charged him with basically failure to do his duty. And that was actually debated at the Constitutional Convention. And one of the framers said, we ought to include maladministration, doing a bad job. And the father of the Constitution, James Madison, said, no, that would turn us into a parliamentary democracy like Great Britain. We don't want that. We are a republic. And a republic elects a president for 4 years, and that president stays in office unless he commits an impeachable offense. And the same rule that applied to presidents applied to cabinet members. It's not surprising that since the establishment of the United States, we have never impeached a cabinet member. This is a first. You think there were cabinet members who committed impeachable offenses? I'll bet you bottom dollar there have been cabinet members who took bribes. There were probably cabinet members who committed treason in the run-up to the Civil War. Nobody has ever been impeached. And they go after this guy because they don't like him. They don't like his policies. They'd really rather impeach Biden, but they can't yet find any impeachable offenses against him as well. And the impeachment, they vote to impeach a week ago or so, and they lose. They lose by two votes. And what do? They hustle around and they get somebody out of the hospital bed, and they bring people, the Republicans, and then a complete fortuity strikes. Two Democrats who wanted to vote against impeachment and who would have changed the vote from favorable to unfavorable, would have lost again by one vote. Two Democrats are kept away from the House on that day. One of them was at an airport trying to get there in time, and his plane had a mechanical failure. I think it was at West Palm Beach Airport, and he couldn't make it, so he didn't vote. And the other one was diagnosed with COVID, and presumably his doctors told him he couldn't get on an airplane and fly. But for those two votes, the impeachment would have been struck down. And then there's another reason why the impeachment is unconstitutional. So it's clearly unconstitutional under the criteria. But there's another reason as well. Impeachment is supposed to be the first step of a two-step process. It's not supposed to be independent. You can't impeach somebody and then say, but we're not going to send it to the Senate for a trial. It's only valid if you intend to send it to the Senate for a trial and have him removed. But everybody knows that the Senate is going to vote against removing him. So impeachment in this case is being used not as a means toward removal, but as an end in and of itself. That's an improper and unconstitutional use of impeachment. Not the first time that has happened. Happened with Donald Trump. Shoe was on the other foot. The Democrats impeached him twice for non-impeachable matters. And they also impeached him knowing they wouldn't win in the Senate. So both reasons why this was an unconstitutional impeachment applied both to Republicans and Democrats. You could say it also applies to Clinton. Clinton was a closer case because there was a crime, but it was a low crime, not a high crime. They impeached him for perjury, and perjury, although not listed, clearly can be included as treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, just as extortion could be, and a range of other similar type crimes could be included. But they knew they weren't going to get the Senate to vote for Clinton's removal. They just wanted to impeach him, and they did, and they wanted to impeach Trump, and they did. So I think all three of those were unconstitutional. The only constitutional impeachment we've had of a president, at least in our history, has been Andrew Jackson. He came very close to being removed. It was really one vote, I think, or maybe two, but a very small number of votes. And so what we have here is the misuse of the impeachment provisions of the Constitution. Now, let me read you what Alexander Hamilton said about this. Among the books I have written and introductions I have written is I have a book, The Federalist Papers. I didn't write The Federalist Papers. I'm old, but I'm not that old. But I wrote the introduction. So Federalist Papers, introduction by Alan Dershowitz. And so, of course, I read The Federalist Papers very, very carefully, not only to write this book, but because of my representation of Donald Trump. And it's Federalist number 65. That's most relevant. And Hamilton wrote that, and he said he understands that impeaching will have a political element to it, that, it involves crimes of a governmental nature, and therefore the passions will be high. So I'll read to you. The prosecution of them for this reason will seldom fail to agitate the passions of the whole community and to divide it into parties more or less friendly or inimical to the accused. Remember, this is before we really had political parties that he wrote this, but still, he talked about that. In many cases, it will connect itself with pre-existing factions. That was the name then for what emerged as the Federalist Party, the Democrat-Republican Party, etc. In many cases, it will connect itself with pre-existing factions and will enlist all their animosities, partialities, influence and interest on one side or on the other. And in such cases, and this is the point, I want you to listen very carefully, Alexander Hamilton, one of the fathers of our nation, one of the fathers of our Constitution, the greatest danger, he says, that's his words, the greatest danger is that the decision will be regulated more by the comparative strength of the parties than by real demonstrations of innocence or guilt. Now, what does that mean? It means you shouldn't count noses. You shouldn't be able to impeach just because you have the votes, the comparative strength of the parties. But then the next part is interesting too, because he says, then by the real demonstration of innocence or guilt. Innocence or guilt of what? Innocence of guilt of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. You're not innocent or guilty of maladministration or failure to comply with one policy or another. There's no innocence or guilt associated with the allegations that have been made against Mayorkas. And so it's so clear that the Mayorkas impeachment is precisely what Hamilton was opposed to. He doesn't want impeachment to turn on the comparative strength of the parties. That's what happened there. It was the comparative strength of the parties on a particular day. You know, it was like a Monday. Yeah, they had enough votes on a Monday. The previous Tuesday, they didn't have enough votes. That's not the basis on which people should get impeached. The Senate knows it, and they're not going to waste any time on this. It's not going to be like the Trump impeachments or the Clinton impeachment, or certainly not like the Andrew Jackson, Johnson impeachment. No, they're going to just, you know, go through some formalities. And, you know, my favorite is my former student, Jamie Raskin. He gets on television just an hour ago, less than an hour ago, and he said, "Oh, this is terrible. The Democrats are making the Constitution and the impeachment provisions into a partisan attack, into a partisan attack." Yeah, Jamie, you started it. You were the guy who brought about the impeachment of Trump on non-constitutional grounds. What chutzpah for you, of all people, Jamie Raskin, my former student. I like you as a person. I helped defend your father more than 50 years ago. How dare you talk about the politicization of impeachment when you are the one who did that to President Trump? You know that the grounds on which Trump was impeached, abuse of power, obstruction of Congress, those are precisely the things that the framers of the Constitution did not want to be grounds for impeachment. So there's hypocrisy on both sides. The Republicans who supported me when I made my argument in floor of the Senate, Republicans came over to me, some Democrats too, but Republicans came over to me. Some hugged me. It's on television. You can see it. They said, "Wow, what a great argument. You've persuaded us. You've persuaded us." Not that they needed persuading, but you persuaded us that in order to impeach somebody, it has to be treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. It can't be abuse of power. It can't be obstruction of Congress. Yeah, we're on your side. We agree with you. What happened yesterday? What happened yesterday? They all changed their mind. The very same people who said it has to be criminal type behavior, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, now say, no. Not when it's a Democrat that we're impeaching. When it's a Democrat we're impeaching, it can be, you know, something like failure to do your job or abuse of power or any of the kinds of things that we said you couldn't do against the Republican. What a bunch of hypocrites, the Republicans who voted to impeach Mayorkas. But what a bunch of hypocrites, the Democrats who voted to impeach Trump and then not to impeach Mayorkas. Both sides were hypocritical. It's like half a dozen congressmen and senators who applied neutral principles, who satisfied the shoe on the other foot test. But the vast majority of members of the Senate, members of the House, let's see what happens in the Senate. Maybe we'll have a few more Republicans who'll say, no, we really can't go and vote to remove Mayorkas. He didn't commit removable offense, an impeachable offense. There may be some of those. We'll see. Be interesting to see how my other former student, Mitt Romney, votes, because, you know, he voted against the removal of, he voted for the removal. I'm sorry. He voted for the removal of Donald Trump. Let's see how he votes on this. I'd be interested. And let's see what the other both Republicans and Democrats and do and where they vote. Look, hypocrisy is the coin of the realm in Washington. We know that. We know that from what happened much earlier, very early in the Biden administration. We know what happened with the Supreme Court appointments when President Obama appointed Merrick Garland, who nobody had ever heard of that, then now he's famous, famously disliked by both Republicans and Democrats for what he recently did. But when he was appointed, Republicans, including a man who I have a lot of respect for, Lindsey Graham, said, no, we can't vote on a Supreme Court nomination the year of a presidential election. It's 11 months or whatever it was, 8 months, 11 months before the election. No, we're going to stall it. We're not going to give him a vote. And they didn't give him a vote. And then when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died just weeks before the election in 2016, before that election, they rushed it through. The same people who said, you can't do it in a presidential year, 8 or 11 months earlier, suddenly said it's okay to do it 4 or 5 weeks earlier. And when one of the senators was asked what the distinction is, he basically said, hey, we control both the White House and the Senate. We can do it. We can do it. There's an old joke about that, which is a little raunchy, but you all know it, about why do dogs do certain things? And the answer was because they can. Why do senators do certain things? Because they can. Why do members of Congress do certain things? Because they can. That's the problem with politics and the Constitution. You know, you'd think there'd be a little bit more respect for Alexander Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton, the most brilliant of the founders and the biggest schmuck, both combination. Brilliant, brilliant. His Federalist Papers are among the most brilliant things ever written about democracy. And then that idiot goes and has a duel and dies at age, 50 something or other, right after his son has a duel. Brilliant schmuck. So welcome to the world of reality. But the brilliance comes through in the Federalists' Papers, and particularly the Federalist paper that talks about the greatest danger of abusing this very, very, very important part of our Constitution, the impeachment provisions, by just having it depend on who has the most votes on that particular day, and using impeachment not as it was intended, as a means, as a first step toward removal, but using it as an independent act simply to cause political embarrassment. Nothing will change for Mayorkas. He'll still get his salary. There'll be a little, footnote in his Wikipedia entry saying he is the first and only, probably only, that probably will happen again soon with other people, but he's the first member of the cabinet ever impeached. I don't think he's going to be the last member of the cabinet to be impeached. I do think that in the future, citing this precedent, unless, it's so attacked and so condemned, we'll see what the vote in the Senate is. But if it's not, then we're going to see it become a routine, normalized part of the political process. You don't like a cabinet member's policies? Impeach them. Just make sure that nobody is sick that day and you have enough votes and you can bring people out of the hospital bed. And if you can arrange maybe for a couple of the people on the other side to stay away, maybe you can get enough votes for an impeachment. Don't worry about the removal. That's not what we're interested in. We're not interested in removing Mayorkas. We're not interested in actually changing the policies. We're interested in just using impeachment as a political partisan tool. Yeah, Alexander Hamilton, we love you. We respect you. We have statutes to you. You're on our $20 bill, all of that. But we ignore you when what you say doesn't serve our partisan and political interests. So I think the Mayorkas vote will go down in history, along with the vote to impeach Trump and the vote to impeach Clinton, as abuses for our Constitution. But how many people are willing to say that all of those were wrong? No, most of the people today, even the people who have denounced the Mayorkas thing, these are people who voted and supported the impeachment of Donald Trump. You know, you can make distinctions. Sure, you can make distinctions. You know, one is a little older than the other. One has blonde hair, the other doesn't. But there's no real constitutional distinction between what the Democratic-controlled House did to Donald Trump and what the Republican-controlled House is doing now to Mayorkas and did to Bill Clinton. So hypocrisy on both your sides, and maybe go back tonight, do a little homework, read the Federalist Papers, and be ashamed of yourself. Okay, let's see what we have in terms of letters today. There were some interesting ones. Here's one. Professor, the $95 billion foreign aid package passed by Congress, it wasn't passed by Congress, it was passed by one house of Congress, we'll see what happens, contains $9.1 billion for humanitarian aid to Gaza and the West Bank. Despite mountains of evidence that such funds will end up in the hands of Hamas and never reach the average citizen in Gaza, both houses of Congress continue to funnel money to the Middle East that ends up aiding terror groups. Should the House pass the bill as it is now written? Well, I want to see the bill passed, but I do think that no money should be given to aid the people of Gaza unless a process is established by which it can be absolutely made certain that the money does not go through Gaza, through Hamas. But what if it goes through UNRWA? That's the same as Hamas. UNRWA is Hamas. It's just Hamas with blue uniforms of the UN, but Hamas totally controls the operations of UNRWA, and it always has for years and years and years. Nothing new about it. You know, people were shocked when they heard that there were tunnels built underneath UNRWA headquarters or UN headquarters. Nobody would be surprised about that. They work hand in hand. They work together. And if aid is given to UNRWA, you know that at least a substantial amount of it will be skimmed off for military uses by Hamas. Okay. All right. I said something nasty about Holland. I've always had a thing about Holland because they come off so well in the histories of the Holocaust. And I said that many, many, many Dutch people and many in the government were complicit with the Nazis and regarded themselves as Nazis. They were Aryans and they were strong supporters of Hitler. But here's the letter. Professor Dershowitz, my Dutch Protestant grandparents hid two young Jewish girls for most of the war. They told me what happened to them, but I can't not remember the story. I know you were generalizing when you spoke about the Dutch, but just so you know, my grandparents did their godly duty to protect the innocent and the young, and I am proud of them. Take care. He's, of course, absolutely right. Not only did many Dutch people sacrifice their lives to protect Jews, so did many German people. So did many Polish people. So did many Ukrainian people. So did many Latvian people. So did many Lithuanian people, but not the majority. They were the minority. They are called righteous Gentiles for a good reason. We know that people actually were killed by the Nazis for harboring Jews, and every one of them deserves to be praised. But the Dutch government doesn't deserve to be praised. The Polish government doesn't deserve to be praised. The Catholic Church in Poland doesn't deserve to be praised. Many of the institutions don't deserve to be praised. There were great Catholic priests. By the way, some Catholic priests died in Auschwitz. Why? Because they were born Jewish. If they had one Jewish grandparent, even if they had been Catholics for two generations and had been priests, they were killed. They were murdered. And many Catholic monasteries helped Jews, including a cousin of mine in my first marriage, who ultimately got out and became a dentist. But he was harbored by Catholic priests. So you don't want to generalize. Either way, you don't want to generalize by saying all were bad or all were good. You judge them individually on whether they were good or bad. Making generalizations about any group of people is a form of identity politics, and you know how much I despise identity politics on the domestic scene. I despise it equally in the international context. Okay, here's one about, this is interesting. This is about Fannie Willis and her boyfriend. Even if sex occurred after he was hired, which we'll have to wait and see tomorrow, we'll see if the judge allows that to come in. I have my doubts whether he will, whether he'll just focus on the financial aspects. But even if sex after he was occurred, relationships begin usually before sex happens. Yes, that's generally true, at least good relationships. You have feelings that develop long before sex. You try to impress the person. You do favors for them. That means she could have hired him in the stage of wanting to impress him and gave him more money than is normal, considering his experience in such matters. They should both be removed. Let's look at it from another perspective. Perhaps she never really had feelings for Wade, but she saw an opportunity to wrap him around her finger in order to influence him to do her bidding. Doesn't have to be money that influences people to do certain favors. Also, would it be wise for Fanny Fawney to recuse herself from the case in order to try to save her career? Would the trial have to happen in that circumstance? It's a very, very subtle and good point. You remember I sang some Enchanted Evening. I got about 20 of these notes, 10 of them saying, wow, you have a nice voice. You know, love to hear you sing again. And the other 10 saying, please, it made my dog throw up. It made me sick. Please never sing again. So I'm gonna take the word of the latter. I'm gonna stick to singing in the shower. But this letter makes a good point. Okay. I don't see her hiring him because she wants to start a relationship, but because he required it to start a relationship with her, as being any better than them already adultering before the hiring. The judge talked about the appearance of impropriety, the appearance of injustice, the appearance of a conflict of interest. I don't think you need a hearing to know that there was an incredible appearance of impropriety. It just smells bad, and it shouldn't have happened. And I'm curious how the judge is going to handle this. And then a question: is Some Enchanted Evening from South Pacific or The Music Man from South Pacific? H.C.O. Pinza, the great bass baritone at the Metropolitan Opera, retired from the Metropolitan Opera and took the role, the great leading man role in South Pacific. I saw it as a kid. I'm not going to sing it again. But it was from South Pacific, not The Music Man. Want me to sing The Music Man? I can do that too, but I'm not going to. Okay. So here we have, we live in interesting times. There's a great, Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We live in interesting times. We're seeing a political campaign which is so influenced by the courts, far too influenced by the courts. We are now more interested. When you look at CNN and Fox and they do an analysis of the election, they're just as likely to have legal experts on as pollsters and political experts, because so much of this election will turn on the courts. CNN today had an analysis by some expert about the first case, and that's the New York case, because that in the next day or so is going to come up for scheduling. And this guy was said it was the strongest case. It was so powerful. It involved, fraud. It involved this. It's the weakest case I've seen in 60 years of practicing law. But because it's against Donald Trump, CNN puts on one after the other legal experts that are so one-sided and so mislead the public. They really they are performing such a terrible, terrible disservice. Every legal analyst on CNN always interprets everything against a Trump. Now, I distinguish my politics from my legal analysis, but CNN is wrong almost every day about the legal issues, and almost all of their predictions have turned out to be false. So please, when you watch CNN on legal analysis, understand this is not a legal analysis. These are political analyses designed to try to defeat Donald Trump in his bid for re-election. And they're misusing their expertise as lawyers to misinform the public about the legal issues that are going on. And so if you want to know what's really going on, listen to somebody like me who really is an expert on the law and doesn't allow his own personal political views to influence his legal analysis. You're not going to get it from CNN. You're going to get it right here on the Durst Show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.